Welcome to Under Lock and Key, news and commentary about prisons from the Revolutionary Anti-Imperialist League.
Prisoners and their families discuss control units and frame-ups.
Fellow Black Panther Asada Shakur talks about the importance of Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These stories and more.
The U.S. incarcerates a greater percentage of its population than any other country, sending more black men to prison than to college. The purpose of this program is to educate about and inspire activism against the American lockdown.
Some people call them maximum security units. Some, special housing units. However, one thing is certain of Pennsylvania's special management units, or SMUs. Their primary purpose is mental and behavioral manipulation, with long-term goals of injecting the violent aspect of the same into minority neighborhoods. Presently, my location is Green Security Management Unit, and I'm housed with a great percentage of minorities who are due to max out within 2 years. After subjecting anyone to the psychological and physiological manipulation one experiences here at Green SMU, for any health or psychiatric official to argue that the ramifications upon release do not include violence is purely hypocritical propaganda. No effort whatsoever is made to counsel those locked up in the SMUs, and the staff employed are anything but qualified to deal with an inmate who is locked down, long-term, 23 hours a day, allowed only 3 showers a week, and forced to exercise in an exercise cage literally no bigger than a dog kennel. To use the word farce would be an understatement. Boredom is a regularity, and of course with boredom comes a need for mental stimulation and or attention. It would appall an unseen, observing psychiatric official to what great lengths some of these caged men go to receive some stimulation. Acts include suicide, throwing fecal matter, smearing fecal matter on themselves, flooding, assaulting, kicking on the door, and the list goes on. In the midst of all this, no psychiatric personnel is to be found, and security turns a blind eye on it. Camp Hill's security management unit is 200 times worse. This, however, is exactly what is wanted, for it is the goal of the Department of Corrections to release these men back into their neighborhoods and have them commit a crime against one of their own and return so as to keep the recidivism rate nice and high. That was a letter from a Pennsylvania prisoner on the 5th of April, 1999.
The following is a letter from a Pennsylvania prisoner. I am writing to bring your attention to the new torture dungeon implemented by the warden, Ronnie Wiley, at the Federal Correction Institution at Raybrook, New York. Inmates are often placed, quote, under investigation in the special housing unit at FCI Raybrook. The special management unit consists of a 23-hour lockdown, which is designed for a maximum capacity of 2 persons per cell. Yet, the warden has instructed his staff to place 4 inmates in the room, with 2 sleeping on the floor. The food is served in trays without lids and is often spoiled or cold. More importantly, the food is kept in a hot cart for hours, which causes it to become dehydrated. As a grand finale, the warden has made it impossible for inmates to flush their toilets. Rather, the inmates must wait for the guard to arrive every few hours. Thus, an inmate must sleep on the floor near a toilet which contains urine and feces. Access to the law library is never granted, despite repeated requests. Medical personnel arrive extremely early in the morning while the inmates are sleeping, and they are very quiet so that the inmates don't wake up to call them to receive medical attention. The new unit is designed to harass and punish the inmates. The warden continues to overcrowd the rooms, despite repeated admonishment from the local courts. This is the new tough-on-crime punishment designed by the federal government. Thank you. A Pennsylvania prisoner, February 9th, 1999.
My name is Mrs. Carmona. Jose Carmona, mother, and my problem is this. My son, he was set up by 3 policemen in Philadelphia. He was sentenced to life. And they said that they was watching him from an abandoned house, and we can prove that the house wasn't abandoned at that time. Now he's to see if he get another trial, because the first one was denied. We got proof, and we know the lady. who was living there. The house wasn't abandoned at the time that they said that the house was abandoned. That happened in 1991, and they get the picture of the house in 1993, at the time they, for real, was abandoned. And I'm not satisfied with that. We poor, we got no money for the lodger, and I haven't got help from nobody. You can imagine how I feel. My son is too far from me. I can't see him. Just communicating by letters. And I'm trying to help the best way I can. I wish you can help me. He called me and he said to me, they called you and give you some information. For now, this is, I don't know, the best that I can do. And there was a lot of guys sentenced, you know, just because the police set them up. But my son was one of them. And he was sentenced to life plus 30 years. And that's not right. That's too much. I wish you can do something. Oh. I hired a lawyer, and he don't help me. He just took the money, you know. And then I'm expecting, you know, to hear from you. Thank you very much, and I appreciate it. Bye.
Mrs. Carmona was recorded by the November Coalition for a CD entitled Voices of the Drug War. They can be reached on the web at www.november.org.
I'm Asada Shakur. The first time I heard a tape of one of Mamiya's radio broadcasts, it was the first time I fully understood why the United States government was so intent on putting him to death. Mamiya, the only African political prisoner on death row, didn't use any inflammatory rhetoric. What he said was so clear, so true, that I had to stop everything and concentrate on his message. Mamiya Abu-Jamal, journalist, husband, father, he is brilliant. He has the ability to say what needs to be said in the clearest, most vivid way. His language, his strength, and his intelligence remind me of one man, El-Haj Malik Shabazz, otherwise known as Malcolm X. Mumia Abu-Jamal is a man who has truly carried on Malcolm's tradition and the tradition of so many of our freedom fighters who have risked their lives for the freedom of our people. This year, as I celebrated Malcolm's birthday, I couldn't stop thinking about Mumia. I couldn't stop thinking about the man who has spent over 15 years on death row and remains strong, committed, and beautiful. Mumia, political activist, revolutionary, and humanist, has followed faithfully in Malcolm's footsteps. We can feel Malcolm's energy working through Mumia. We can feel Mumia's energy carrying on Malcolm's legacy. If Malcolm X were alive today, I know he would be fighting to save Mumia's life. If Malcolm were alive today, I know he would be fighting to free all political prisoners. In the name of Malcolm X, I make a special appeal to you, sisters and brothers, to fight tooth and nail to save Mumia's life and to free him from the grips of his oppressors. As you honor our forefathers and foremothers, I urge you to honor our living heroes. When you honor the names of Nat Turner, Harriet Tubman, and Malcolm X, I urge you to honor the names of Geronimo Gijaga, Sundiata Okoli, Mutulu Shakur, and Mumia Abu-Jamal. I urge you not to forget and not to betray our living heroes. If we ignore their struggle, we are ignoring our own. If we betray our living history, then we are betraying ourselves. We could not save Malcolm X, but we can save Mamiya. We can save him, and we must save him. Because we love our brother, and we need our brother to help us fight for freedom. Free Mamiya Abu-Jamal, free all political prisoners. Let us carry on our tradition to freedom.
In every phase and facet of national life, there is a war being waged on America's poor. In social policy, poor mothers are targeted for criminal sanctions for acts, if committed by mothers of higher economic class, would merit treatment at the Betty Ford Center. In youth policy, governments hasten to close schools while building boot camps and prisons as their graduate schools. Xenophobic politicians hoist campaigns to the dark star of imprisonment for street beggars, further fattening the fortress economy. The only apparent solution to the scourge of homelessness is to build more and more prisons. In America's 90s, to be poor is not so much socioeconomic status as it is a serious character flaw, a defect of the spirit. Federal statistics tell a tale of loss and want so dreadful that Dickens, of A Tale of Two Cities fame, would cringe. Consider 7 million people homeless with less than $200 in monthly income. 37 million people, 14.5% of the nation's population, living below poverty levels. Of that number, 29% are African Americans, meaning over 10.6 million blacks living in poverty. Both wings of the ruling Republican Party try to outdo themselves in announcing new, ever more draconian measures to restrict, redress, restrain, and to eliminate the poor. One is reminded of the wry observation of French writer Anatole France: the law, in its majestic equality, forbids the rich as well as the poor to sleep under bridges, to beg in the streets, and to steal bread. Already, U.S. manufacturers have fled to NAFTA-friendly Mexico, and only the Zapatista insurgency in Chiapas has slowed an emerging flood of Western capital. Outgunned in the industrial wars by Japan and Germany, the U.S. has embarked on a low-technology, low-skilled, high-employment scheme that exploits the poor, the stupid, and the slow via a boom in prison construction, America's sole growth industry. Increasingly, more and more Americans are guarding more and more American prisoners for more and more years, and this amidst the lowest crime rate in decades. No major political party has an answer to this social dilemma, short of cages and graves for the poor. The time is ripe for a new, brighter, life-affirming vision that liberates, not represses, the poor, who, after all, are the vast majority of this earth's people. Neither serpentine politics nor a sterile economic theory which treats them, people, as mere economic units offer much hope, for the very politicians they vote for spit in their faces while economists write them off as non-persons. It must come from the poor, a rebellion of the spirit that reaffirms their intrinsic human worth based upon who they are rather than what they possess. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
This has been Under Lock and Key, a revolutionary anti-imperialist league program about prisons. For more information, contact Rail, P.O. Box 712, Amherst, Massachusetts 01004, or email railradio@min.org.